We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome to What Hears. We're recording this Thursday, February 2nd, 8:30 p.m. after the Warriors have lost 134-117 to the Denver Nuggets. Sitting across from me, I got Aaron Larsoul. Aaron, I feel like losing to the Nuggets on a back-to-back. I was honestly surprised Steph even played, but no Draymond, no Klay. Expected. Like, the loss itself is not surprising. With that said, it doesn't mean frustrations don't come out while you're watching it, because the Warriors started really hot and it looked like they might be able to pull a little upset tonight.
Yeah. I mean, yes, all of that. I thought it was interesting. You know, Steph said the other day that he was kind of campaigning. It's never players that want to do the load management and sit out. And he was campaigning to play both sides of the back-to-back. And I think the follow-up question was, like, do you expect your campaigning to be successful? And he said, yeah, actually, kind of. So I was surprised, much like you were, to see Steph play. The other part of this is, low-key, Denver is the most difficult back-to-back in the league.
Yeah, that's the part I didn't even say. Like, of all back-to-backs, flying to altitude where they have a built-in home court in general.
So that's part of it. That's a lot of it. Playing in the altitude is part of it. The other thing that a lot of people don't know, unless you know you've kind of experienced this, is the Denver airport is farthest away from actual Denver, like where you stay, of anywhere in the league. It's like 45 minutes.
It's a very inconvenient flight.
So to have it be the second, yeah, and it takes like 45 minutes to get from the airport to your hotel. So especially if it's the second night of a back-to-back, you're already going to be getting into wherever you would be flying late. And then to have to do that and have the extra 45 minutes, it just, that and the altitude just make Denver the worst back-to-back in the league. So not surprising. I thought the Warriors played reasonably well, and it was kind of an even game for all of it, except for that like 90-second stretch where Steph threw the ball to the other team a bunch of times and Denver went on that 16-0 run.
Yeah, and to your point on it, like, I mean, Fitz mentioned multiple times, oh, you don't get into your hotel room at 3 a.m. and that sort of thing, but it is kind of a thing.
It is a thing, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, all things considered, loss, not surprising. It stings more because they lost the game they should have won the night before in Minnesota, and now the Warriors are back to 500. They have not been more than two games over 500 all season, which is both surprising and unsurprising at the same time. If you've watched every game, it's not surprising. Yeah.
So after that start, where'd they start? 3-7? Is that right?
Correct.
So after they got to two games under, whenever the first time they were two games under, have they been more than two games under or more than two games over ever since?
I'd have to check the under because I feel like they've hit three games under a couple times, but like your point, your big picture point's accurate. Like, they haven't particularly stretched far from 500 in either direction. Anytime it feels like they're going to, they go on a little winning streak. Anytime it feels like they're going to expand, they go on a losing streak. Just kind of sucks. I don't know how else to put it.
At some point, it's just who they are, right?
it is just kind of who they are. Like, you could make the case Draymond's value was exemplified tonight by not being out there. Like, Denver, I don't know, their effort level, what would you give it as? B minus?
I mean, that might be kind. Yeah.
Yeah. They felt like a team who's just like, we can put these guys away when we want to, and we're not going to extend more energy than we need to. And they're right. You know, without Draymond, the Warriors are not a good defensive team. Even if Looney and Wiggins are good defensive players and they have the bones of a potentially good defensive team, they're not a good defensive team without Draymond. And Denver took advantage of it. That said, like, I don't know. We can keep going through it. Like, here's a question I've wanted to ask you. I've been toying with it. I don't know what to make of Andrew Wiggins anymore. He had the season of his career and playoff run to kind of right the wrongs, like all the negative stereotypes about him, and it's earned. And he also had an amazing start to the season, but he's not been good since he's been back from the injury. He had a couple decent games. Tonight was another, you know, I don't really care that he was 3 for 14. Well, I do, to be fair. But, you know, he didn't shoot the ball well, but it's just like the overall impact and that sort of stuff. It's just, it feels very kind of stuck in mud. And
it feels very the worst of Minnesota Wiggins. That's what you're getting at? Yeah.
Not that bad. But yeah, I mean, it does feel like something needs to change there. And I just don't know, you know, if it's a combo of coming back off injury and nothing with the Warriors being right, or if it's something bigger. I'm tempted to just say, like, man, everyone's off on this team. So it's like, I don't want to really point to anyone.
But I think it's the same thing, right? Like, yes. So it's the same thing as, like, it's a microcosm of the Warriors, right? They've been up and down at different times, right? Wiggins started the year incredibly. The Warriors did not. But at some point, I think you can say the same thing about Wiggins as you can say about the Warriors. Like, at some point this far into the season, maybe this is just who he is this season. Maybe this is just who the Warriors are this season. It doesn't mean there aren't reasons for it, right? Like, Wiggins has had a very strange injury and sickness, last 2 months? But at this point, he's been back long enough to get his legs back under him and get his timing back, and he's been just bad. There are reasons why the Warriors have been very up and down and just decidedly mediocre. But at some point, the reasons don't really matter anymore, and this is just what it is.
Yeah, at some point, it's like, this is who you are until you give me 10 games in a row to tell me things have changed. You know, I'm no longer going to be able to react to two hot games of being like, the season changing. You know,
it's like a plane analogy, right? Like, if a plane is taken off, like, there is still a runway. There's still enough time left for the Warriors to, you know, fly the plane and take off and get to whatever heights that they hope to get to. But you're running out of runway here.
Yeah. We have a quick update on the Draymond situation. Draymond sat tonight with a left calf. The only reason I'm a little concerned about it is calf is what led to back last year. Right. Steve Kerr in the postgame press conference goes, Draymond Green calf tightness. The belief is it's something minor, but he'll get it checked out when we're home. Steve doesn't like to comment on injuries because in the past he has, and he's gotten in trouble. So he does this. We'll see. We'll see what happens there, but I don't love it, to be honest with you.
No, the soft tissue stuff with Draymond always makes me nervous.
No, given how he plays, not great. So, but we'll see. I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to concern an injury thing I don't know anything about. We also got a super chat from our guy. Awesome. Can't keep punting these back-to-backs. They're running out of games. Another one on Tuesday. Can they stop wasting our time and start the rebuild or not? First off, he is correct. There are officially only 30 games left in the season. Like, at some point, you got to make a run or you don't, you know? Like you said, maybe this is who they are. But it is, you know, 30 games here.
There are reasons for optimism.
Give me them.
But... Well, I mean, the starting five, I guess it's not the starting five anymore because Steve is obsessed with starting Jordan Poole, which I understand in one part because Poole is good when he starts and terrible when he doesn't. But the starting five that started the season is still the best five-man group in the league. And Poole and Steph and Klay together are just awful. There is the eye test fails, the analytics fail. So the optimism is, okay, you have the best five-man group maybe in the league. That's a reason for optimism. Once you get to the playoffs, you don't really have to play more than eight guys. That's a reason for optimism because the first eight are pretty good. There's also reasons for pessimism, which is why you get what the Warriors are right now,
which is 500.
Part of the answer of that question, like, can we get it together or start the rebuild already? I think, and you and I were texting about this a second ago, I think it kind of goes back to the beginning of the year, and I call it death by half measures. Like, part of it's on Kerr. How much of that is Bob Myers? How much of that is the front office? We don't know. So this gets laid at who plays gets laid at Steve Kerr's feet, because that's the only person we can say that person is making that decision.
But I mean, Steve lets you know what he thinks. This is the we'll talk about James Wiseman in a few minutes. First game Wiseman's played in 2023.
Yeah, literally
in the new year. And he's been healthy for the last five or so. So he's letting you know by not playing him what he thinks.
But he played him at the beginning of the year.
And he promptly pulled him out of the rotation and kind of
played Kuminga, but not really. Kind of played Moody, but not really. Mm-hmm. And the Warriors also were losing games during this time. So if you're not developing the young guys and you're not winning games, you're stuck in the middle. And it's like if you have two quarterbacks, you have neither. Our Niners just lost on Sunday, right? But if you have two quarterbacks, you have none.
You have four quarterbacks.
Yeah, right. Three and a half. But
sure.
So like, it's death by half measures. They're accomplishing neither side of it.
Alan saying, I don't see how you blame Kerr for the roster. To clarify, I don't think either of us are blaming Kerr for the roster. We're blaming misalignment on.
Yeah, I'm not blaming Kerr for the roster.
On just everyone.
You would know better than me, but like even you who knows about as well as anybody who's not inside the organization, we don't have an answer for what portion of why one guy is playing and not playing, how much of that is Steve, how much of that is Bob Myers, how much of that is Joe Lacob. We don't have the answer to that. So all we can do is say, point at the coach and say, you're playing this guy and maybe you should be playing this guy.
Here's how I see it. Front office clearly was hoping that they could develop guys into roles while keeping them at a title level. The coaching staff at some point with the terrible start decided that was not possible because coaches are more concerned with winning games today than big picture stuff, particularly. And Steve has said this like five times, you know, like I feel an obligation to my guys to go for a title, and he should feel an obligation. They've won four titles together. Mm-hmm. As long as he has Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and they're able to compete with anyone. And they still are very much, maybe the roster's not, but those three guys, I still feel like if they have the right team, they can hang with anyone in the NBA. And there's not a lot of guys. How many teams in the NBA can say their core can do that? Five?
Yeah. I mean, Milwaukee,
You know, the Lakers, the Celtics, are a mess, but like, you know, you put the right team around LeBron, they're always in the mix. The Celtics, same could be said for the Nets, who are playing well right now. Like, I don't want to see a good team around KD and
we thought Kyrie. Maybe the Suns at one point, but they're the biggest fraud.
No, I never bought them. I sniffed that one out from the beginning. Bias or not, I did.
I had to tee you up for that one.
My point is, I get it. But now, like you said, and maybe they won last year. Let's be honest. They won last year, and that had
doing
them
the same
double
thing, basically.
Yeah, but they didn't have as many kids on the roster last year, and the kids didn't play, dude.
Doing the same thing, meaning relying on we can develop young guys and we'll rely on our core. The problem is that takes an incredible amount of confidence. And when it doesn't go well at the beginning of the year, you still have to have the confidence that we're still riding with this anyway. My issue is, like, at this point, what is the plan? They're stuck in between.
Here's what I think the difference between last year and this year is.
Otto Porter and Bielitsa and GP2?
Correct. But let's call it what it is. They got incredibly high-level production from veteran minimum contracts. And I don't think Steve Kerr really had to develop the young guys in a meaningful way because none of them played in the playoffs. He may have given Kuminga a run in the regular season, but it was Otto Porter and GP2 and Bielitsa and Damian Lee and those guys in the playoffs.
JTA.
And this year, they don't have those veteran minimum guys. And I don't think that speaks to a front office problem with finding veteran minimum guys. I think that's just the nature of veteran minimums. Some years you don't. I think they think their plan was smarter than it was. And maybe they just got lucky with veteran minimums last year. And the coach never had to figure out how to develop guys and make them meaningful. This year, guys like Jamichael Green, that's more your classic veteran minimum. The guy plays hard.
Yeah.
He certainly has a role. He's not a $10 million player you magically stole for $1 million, which is what Otto Porter was and GP2 was.
Yeah.
And because of that, the inability to develop those guys, those young guys around the core now looks way worse. Because last year, if Kuminga or Wiseman didn't play a minute last year, but if like Kuminga or Moody are unable to play, it's fine. Otto's got it, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. Now they don't have the training wheels, and it shows how little depth they have.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the reason I'm saying you're doing it again, like nobody wanted, I mean, Kerr did, but Steph didn't want GP2 last year. It was the same thing, right? Because you and I sat on this very show a handful of times at least and said, what are they doing? Trade the young guys for somebody that can help. They had the confidence not to do that, and it worked.
I mean, did they?
It looks like they're running it back.
I just want to.
They've aborted mission like a few weeks in.
I just want to be clear. Bob Myers publicly admitted they tried to acquire players at the deadline and couldn't get it done last year.
No, I mean before the season, even.
Oh, I hear what you're saying. Okay.
And you're the point you're making though is a good one about like what you do generally with veteran minimum guys, right? Like, Otto Porter and GP2 were both home run, minimum home runs. They were home runs last year. Bielitsa was a double, maybe. Usually,
yeah, Otto, like those, you know,
those guys.
Every now and then you find that once in a while. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you get this. You get what you're seeing now, right? The reason Jamichael Green is a veteran minimum guy. There's like two categories. There are either guys that can do one thing and that's it, or they can do a little bit of everything. But they can only do it once every five games.
Right. Not at a level that makes you want to give them more than a veteran minimum.
There's a reason. There's a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, Nick Batum is an example of a guy a couple of years ago who it was very clear he was going to be a steal as a veteran minimum.
Yeah.
But those guys don't come along every year.
Those guys are the guys that are on terrible teams.
Sure. It's a confluence of factors. Yeah, exactly.
They just quit because they're on a terrible team and then they get bought out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, J.J. Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Solomon's Tech brings this up for us. There's no optimism, Aaron. We're 52 games in with the best starting five, and we're 500. A trade won't fix the turnovers either. I disagree with him. And here's where I disagree. I think they need to shake up the roster just for like emotional karma. Like it does. Part of their terrible play right now is dog day frustration mixed with a team that's mediocre. You know, like there is something to be said. Like you add a player who can play and there's a little more pep in Draymond's step. Klay's a little happier. Steph is a little more excited. Jordan Poole doesn't feel like he's, you know, the butt of all the problems. I don't know if that's how he feels, but just, it does feel like he's carrying a larger load than he should. And, you know, and on down the line, right? Like sometimes those type of things help.
So I agree, Solomon, that a trade won't fix the turnovers. I agree with that because the main culprits in the turnovers are guys that are still going to have the ball all the time. Steph, Poole, Draymond, like those guys are still going to, no matter who you go get, those guys are going to have the ball all the time and they're turnover prone. But tonight was a great reason or a great encapsulation of why the Warriors probably do need to do something. They were missing one front court player, Draymond Green, and that forced them.
That's a pretty good one.
And yeah, he's great. He's a Hall of Fame, you know, all of that. But just in the rotation, you subtract one front court player and they were forced to play somebody they haven't played in a month and a half who wasn't any good before that. Because the other option would have been Anthony Lamb, who's a two-way guy that wasn't available.
Can we talk Wiseman? I meant to get to this way earlier. First minutes in 2023, first minutes since December 29th. Obviously, he got injured, missed a couple weeks there. Then since he's come back, he hasn't got any minutes. It kind of ties to the overarching point. Should he have been playing? What did you think of his minutes tonight? Should he have been playing more?
Should he have been playing more since he's returned, since he's been healthy, you mean?
Yes, obviously.
Like the last five games or so?
Yeah, exactly. Like, because let's be real about it. Minnesota, they played 7.5 guys, and that factored in heavily to that loss. And they've been doing that, you know, 7-8-man rotation for a few nights now, where, you know, older core, thin rotation, like, shocker. They look tired. Should Wiseman have played more?
Yes. I mean, he's not any good, but the only way he has a chance of being any good is if he gets to play. And again, like if you're not going to play him in this situation, then you're never going to play him, which we had last time I was on. We had this conversation, like I think it was because Looney had four fouls in the first half and he didn't play. So my question was, why not send him to the G League then? So, yeah, he should have been playing more. Would that have led to any wins, more wins? I don't know. But this goes back to the beginning of the year. You're not winning games anyway. So you may as well do something. Try to develop him. There's a chance he could develop.
Do you think you're playing hindsight bias on that one? Because it's like, now we know they're not winning those games. So, you know, all that
chasing
a short-sighted rotation. Like, of course, if you told me they'd be 26-26 at this point, I'd have been like, I hope Wiseman got developed.
Right.
You know?
That's fair.
I was going to say, in some ways, this is the worst case scenario. They're not winning games and they haven't developed anyway.
Correct. But that is why I went back and said earlier that what they did last year, it ended up working. But to stick to that plan requires a ton of confidence. It requires specifically in the core, right? You think the core is good enough. even last year without evidence, I mean, without recent evidence, you think the core is good enough that you can do both. They went into this year thinking the core is good enough, we can do both. They tried to do both kind of at the beginning and then aborted mission because it wasn't working. So it takes the confidence, like it's not looking back at it. It is saying you have to have the confidence that these guys can carry you and you can still play the guys or else the whole thing is sunk. Yes, Wiseman should have been playing more.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think you hit it actually 5 minutes ago. It's half measures across the board. That's frustrating. Commit to playing them and live with the result or move them and be all in. But this whole, like a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, and we're going to do all these things. It's shockingly, it's leading you to being a middle of the road team.
It gives you 25 and 25 or whatever they
26
are.
Yeah. 26 and 26, but you know, and 26. It's still 500. So it's tiresome. It's tiresome at this point.
But there's still that thing like in the back of your head where you go like, if they can just make it to the playoffs, like, do you, yeah. I still think they're the favorites in the West.
Oh,
I think Denver's the best team in the West, but I don't think Denver can beat the Warriors.
I don't know. I'm with you where I can't count out the core of this team. Like, I need to see it happen. I need to see them explode in the playoffs before I believe it'll happen. Like I've watched this team for a decade. I've said this, I'm going down with the ship, you know, like whatever it may be, you know, Steph, Clay, Draymond, like they are the greatest core that the Warriors have had in my lifetime. And I'd be shocked if I ever see a better one in my lifetime. Right.
You will not.
Yeah. I'm playing math here. Definitely not living. I mean, okay,
like
years,
unless you want to go back 4 years, right, and include Durant, but other than that,
sure. No. But even with that, that's just a cherry on top of the same core. But my point stands. You know, I don't think you're going to see three guys stick with the franchise for over a decade and give you four rings, you know, six finals appearance, and all that sort of stuff. Like this is, you know, there's like five teams in NBA history who've done that type of stuff. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. I have a hard time picking against them, but yeah, I feel that way. We got one more question to get to real quick. That's just more of a comment. Appreciate it. Awesome.
Spolster's great.
Spolster's my favorite coach, so I'm not going to criticize him. He's also stubborn. Newsflash, all great coaches are stubborn.
I got another newsflash for you. All coaches are stubborn, whether they're great or not.
The great ones just have stuff to fall back on to justify it. Right. Should
the great
we...
ones you say this is why I'm stubborn, and the bad ones you say this is what you were stubborn about.
The bad ones let you second guess them at a much higher level.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Should we get to voicemails real quick? I think we should. We got some good calls here. Timmy, let's do it.
What's up, guys? I just feel bad for the Warriors at this point, especially like the core. So clear that they really like to try to have fun, and the margin of error is so thin. They just, if they want to win, they just can't have fun. Like this whole Steve Kerr hitting singles thing is just not who Steph, Clay, and Draymond want to be. They want to throw that risky push ahead pass. They want to try to hit that bounce pass through. That's what gets them going. And in order to win, they're going to have to slog through playing unfun basketball. And I don't know if they can do it. I don't know if they want to do it. And this team as currently constructed won't let them get that little margin of error they need to play the way they want to play. It just sucks to fucking watch.
It's interesting. It's an interesting point. So, like, I feel like let me sum up my interpretation of his call.
Okay.
You're not as talented as you've been in the past, so you can't fuck around as much and you have to play smarter the whole way.
Yes, I agree with what you're saying. I think that is evident. I disagree with the part of that Steve Kerr is like forcing them to hit singles. The Warriors lead the league in three-pointers attempted and three-pointers made. So they're not shooting them incredibly well. They're shooting them well, but not incredibly well.
Did you see Steve do that last game? He signals single. Where he's so it's become a thing. He's trying to imply to his team,
take the single. You don't need a home run. Yeah, exactly.
Jordan, I don't need the triple hezzy step back from 28.
Well, I mean, he is the one guy, right? Yeah.
I mean, but it, also Steph and other guys. And like, obviously Steph is allowed to do that because he's Steph Curry. And I mean, I really shouldn't have to explain to listeners why he's allowed to, but you know, like the general concept is like the team loves to make the home run play to get the crowd ooing and aahing. And he's just like, just play simple, guys. You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's something.
Hit the center.
There is something inherent to this, kind of goes to like the joy, specifically with Steph, but also with Draymond, that like there are going to be turnovers, right? Like you're going to get greatness, but coming with that greatness, part of that is the turnovers offensively. That has been a thing that has been inherent. That is why Steve Kerr's hair is whatever color it is now, is because he wants to like it's gray and pull it out because it drives him nuts. But some of that is built into how the Warriors play. They pass more, right? For whatever reason, even when Steph's mom yells at him and finds him, he will make the one arm swing pass. That's never going away. It's not particularly effective, but kind of like when Draymond crosses the line with physicality and with emotion, you can't get the good and separate the stuff you don't like. It's the same way with Steph. And it's probably, it's the same way with Jordan Poole too. Like, If you neuter those guys, you're not going to get the good.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of what it is. And it's what it's been for years and years and years. But to your point, they're not as talented as they've been.
Well, to me, it's and we can get to this a little bit. But like the big thing is, I don't think they have as much defensive talent as they used to. Because usually, like if you break down the Warriors' philosophy to the core, it's like defend, move the ball, and live with Steph's creativity. You know, like Steph will handle the offense, and with that will come like some mind-boggling stuff that sometimes you don't like, because on the other end of it, he does stuff that no one else on planet Earth has ever been able to do. Yes. But if we just defend, we'll be fine, you know? And I don't think they have the defensive talent they've had in the past.
No, I mean, they absolutely do not.
I mean, they have one lineup that has the capability of defending, but like that's the problem. Just one lineup combo.
Yeah. I have said for a long time, like people have always seen the Warriors offense, right? And all the Splash Brothers and all the fireworks and thought that's what it was. The reason the Warriors have win all the time or have in the past is because there will be a stretch at some point during the game where the Warriors turn your water off, period. There's a 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 minute stretch where the Warriors turn your water off and they're going to keep making shots. The Warriors will still make shots. And at some point, you're just not going to score. And those 4 minute stretches, often they were in the third quarter at Chase and at Oracle, the Warriors are going to put 16 on you and you're going to, what Denver did to the Warriors today, basically.
Yeah.
If going to be a stretch where the Warriors turn your water off. If they're feeling it,
it's a 20-2 run.
Right.
And it's but very that was, hard that was to all beat because any of the NBA defense. Team.
The exactly. offense was the same. That they would just have a period where the Warriors would turn your water off.
That's true. All right. Let's get to the next one, Tim.
Hey, guys. I want to talk Caruso. I totally agree with Andy and Sam that Caruso would be a really good fit with the team. And I think most people agree with that. And I see a knock on Caruso being, well, he's redundant because we have Dante. Well, the reality is Dante's going to leave this offseason because I think he's playing really well. So we would have Caruso, I think, for another year after that. I think he has 2 years left on his contract. So, I mean, feel free. If I'm wrong about that, don't air this, but I'm pretty sure he has 2 years left. So, like, you know, thinking in the future, that's another reason to go for Caruso. Thanks, guys.
First off, appreciate the call. Second off, you're not wrong. Third off, even if you're wrong, we'd lie. All right, let's talk Caruso. We're less than 7 days away from the trade deadline. Most of you are going to be listening to this on Friday, so we are 6 days away from the trade deadline. And let me ask you a big picture question first.
Okay.
How spicy do you think this trade deadline is getting?
I think it is going to be spicy. I think it's going to require somebody to kind of break the dam and set the market, because the market got out of what a first round pick is worth, got out of whack over the summer.
Just blame Rudy Gobert, please.
I mean, we can blame him for COVID. We can blame him for for messing up the trade market.
You killed the dynasty. You can't guard the Warriors, but you killed their trade chances.
So I think it will get spicy, but I think somebody is going to have to take the first plunge first. As it relates to Caruso, yeah, the caller was correct. He's this year and next year, and then in 24, I think it's 24-25. He has a partial guarantee for that season. So
is that team or player option?
Just a partial guarantee. So
he's guaranteed. Every team on earth would pick that up at that rate.
No, so it's not a team either. It's up to the team. Either he's making like nine something, they can waive him and pay him $3 million, or keep him and pay him nine.
So for all intents and purposes, if you were to trade for him, you could have him at a discounted rate relative to his production for the next 2.5 years.
Correct. Two seasons after this. Three playoffs, theoretically.
Pretty attractive deal.
Caruso's a damn good player. I think he would
meant fit. To play for the Warriors.
I think he would fit well with the Warriors. Basketball IQ, good moving the ball.
Excellent defender.
He has experience, right? Won the title with the Lakers in the bubble, so has played in big games, has that kind of it started in the clinching game, in fact. So I don't think, you know, those playoff moments that the Warriors thrive on, I don't think those would be too big for him. There is something strange about it, though. He's a really good defense. You know what? He's kind of like a bigger Dante, a better defensively, not as good offensively, because he's just a connector.
Or a smaller Andre Iguodala.
That's a better comparison, because AC is a decent, he can shoot it a little bit.
Yeah, but he's not a shooter.
He's just incredibly hesitant, right? You'll see games where he plays, you know, 26 minutes or something like that, has 3 assists and 5 rebounds and a couple steals and a block, and he's like 1 for 3 from the floor, 2 points.
He's very Iguodala-ish on offense.
Yeah.
And it's to be seen if he has the Iguodala like troll gene where he'll randomly hit 3 threes in a big game. You know, like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, Andy and I always talk about it. It's like, all right, you can point to all the negative things, but like, if it's a game 7, Andre's putting the shots up if he needs to put them up. You know,
you're doing your Max Kellerman. Give me Iguodala.
Look, man. Give me enough big games without. Look, actually, I'll be clear with it. I'm watching a lot of non-Iguodala play these days. It makes me romanticize the Iguodala.
That's fair. But I think that's a better comparison. AC's a damn good player, and would fit. He's the kind of guy that would fit anywhere. Outside of the fact that he's a not particularly willing shooter. He's a great fit for the Warriors.
This isn't even a negative Caruso thing. It's more of a comment on the Warriors' current roster.
Yeah.
Dante's good enough for a backup guard role.
Yeah.
What they really need is a 3-4 man who's a bigger wing, you know, basically an Otto Porter replacement, someone who's 6'8", 6'9", who can do Warriors-y things, ideally has athleticism. I know Otto didn't, but like that sort of thing. Caruso upgrades their talent and helps them, but like he doesn't address those things. You're still just kind of like going to be playing Wiggins and Clay at the 4, and you can be really small. So
Right. I mean,
these are not reasons to not acquire him if you can get him. But, you know,
Steve, I think it was today. Maybe it was last night, said, like, I view Clay as a 3-4, not a 2-3. So I guess so. But like, the Warriors have four guards and they're all pretty good. You know, they have Steph and Poole and DiVincenzo.
It's not
and Clay,
the position of weakness. So, yeah. If you were to look at the roster, guards, not the position of weakness. What, no matter how good Caruso is, how much he fits everything they do, and the team control is very attractive for a team who's over the cap. Like, at least you know you got like this rotation piece who connects everything and kind of makes everyone better for the next couple of years. Not the perfect fit, but hey, man.
No, it also it'll save Joey Lightyear some money, right? Because
Yeah.
I mean, that basically financially, I mean, you're not trading Kuminga. So financially, that basically has to be Wiseman, who's guaranteed $12 million next year. Caruso's at $9 million. Like, okay, it's only a $3 million right difference. There. But with the tax, for the tax purposes, it's much bigger than $3 million difference. And you have to figure out with Wiseman, are you extending him? Which is a decision I don't know how to make at this point also. So it saves you from that.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the next call.
Hey, guys. My name is Greg, a.k.a. G-Money, a.k.a. Greg Hero. And I was calling this suicide hotline, I mean, the Light Years hotline, just to, you know, just talk about how, you know, it's just same shit, different day. This was an expected loss, so it doesn't really care as much. But still, Wiggins been selling ever since he came back from injury. He's been playing drunk every day. Well, thanks.
I mean, one, I appreciate the goon creativity.
Yeah.
Love y'all. You know, keep them coming through. We did hit on Wiggins a little earlier, so I kind of wish we'd saved it for after that call. But I don't know, that's frustrating. I don't know what to make of him.
No, so here, this is the, like a big picture thing that's not related to Wiggins specifically, but games like tonight are why you can't lose yesterday, why you can't lose to Charlotte, like you can't lose to Detroit twice, why you can't lose to Orlando
by Detroit
twice.
And Orlando. Like, you told me preseason they would get swept by Detroit and Orlando. I don't know, probably
Orlando, I think, is my favorite team in the NBA to watch that like I don't cover or talk about or follow.
Like, I need the Warriors to make a trade with Orlando because Orlando has nothing but front court players.
Yeah, they have guards. 8-6-10 to 7-3 guys.
Zero guards. They're literally like, if you wanted to trade Jordan Poole, Orlando is the perfect spot.
Can I interest you in a lightly used Mo Bamba? Because I can promise you he's quite available.
Oh, I'm shooting higher. I want a Jonathan Isaac, maybe a Bull Bull.
Are you sure Jonathan Isaac is shooting higher?
Yes. I mean, can defend.
Yeah, but he also hasn't played in 3 years.
It's been four games, but I feel confident. Now we'll see. But like your point stands. Like there's a plethora of options. We could debate them all. You know,
they're my favorite team to watch. I want them to start 5-7 footers, and they're not that far from it.
Yeah, I mean, they're right there. Let's get the next call.
I mean, at this point, like, just trade the core and start the rebuild. Like, you just holding it hostage now. You're just holding the core hostage with this, like, two timeline plan.
Second point is,
I don't think Steve has done a good job coaching this year. Like, if you told me Eric Spoelstra had this roster, like, I guarantee.
My man. Love you, but we can't go there. Can't go there the whole way.
Trade the core for what?
A bunch of draft picks to build around the young guys that aren't working? I will not entertain this. I'm fully happy signing up for a season of Clay shooting 30% while they go 20-62 at this stage. I'm willing to live with that. We're not doing that right now. By the way, I thought we were getting that this season, given his start to the season, but let's leave it at this. I wanted to ask you this. This will be really quick.
Okay.
No second Warrior on the All-Star team.
Yeah.
Not particularly surprised. Did any All-Star snub surprise you?
Yeah, I mean, The Jaren Jackson Jr. being there is kind of difficult to defend because he hasn't played more than AD and Zion.
Right. So if the bar is those guys aren't
right
playing,
and they both finished, they finished. They were like right there with in terms of the fan voting, were like way ahead of him. Jaren Jackson Jr. may win Defensive Player of the Year, and he probably should. But like, I was surprised. I was surprised Julius made it from the Knicks. I was surprised Randall made it. I didn't think either of the Knicks belonged. But
My whole thing is, and this drives me insane. I can understand a Nick making the All-Star team. It's not like a mandatory, like in my heart, like, oh God, they're the seven seed. Got to get them an All-Star, you know? But if I was to pick a Knicks player to be an All-Star, I feel like Jalen Brunson is an obvious choice. I feel like everything revolves around him. He's kind of like the heart of the team. Also just the best player on the team in general. Yes. So that's the other one. And I felt the same way about the Sacramento Kings. I think Sabonis is a really good player. I think he's had a really good season. And the Sacramento Kings absolutely do deserve an All-Star. I would have picked De'Aaron Fox.
Yes.
I would have picked De'Aaron Fox.
Not Harry B? No love for Harry B?
My guy is just the quintessential professional, but he's not an All-Star.
I think they also need to... I mean, this is always a conversation, but kind of just do away with the position thing.
Sure.
Like, you know, the Embiid not starting thing. There's an argument for the guys that are starting ahead of him. He's going to
finish second in MVP again. But yeah, if you're going to pick the five best players in the East, sorry, four of them are front court players.
This year, right. And plus, I mean, like, they're not playing. Like, I don't care about creating a team because it's not East versus West anyway.
Sure.
So who cares? It's going to sort itself out because I assume KD's not going to play, so Embiid will be a starter. But like, we can get rid of that because we're not playing East versus West anyway. So yeah. Get rid of the positions. You know, I think it is going to be interesting if there is an injury replacement in the West. You know, like, where does AD should probably be in that group of first people? So, I mean, because he was maybe the best player in the NBA for a short stretch, but he's been damn good. I said it was a very short stretch. But yeah, I just, like, I don't get the
Jaren Jackson. I mean, Jordan Poole's been the best player in the NBA certain nights, so.
He may have been the best player in the NBA for the past, I mean, the last, whatever, 15 or 20 games of last season.
Yeah, anyway. It's All-Star. It is what it is. Aaron, I appreciate you, my man.
My pleasure.
We'll be back.